We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Good afternoon, everyone out there in Irish Breakdown land. I'm Vince D'Addario. That's Brian Driscoll. And we are going to continue our breakdown of the Notre Dame football schedule for this upcoming fall. And we have broken it up into quarters, right? So last week on Thursday, we did the first quarter, which was the first three games of the season. Obviously, that is Ohio State, Marshall, and Cal. Today, we are going to talk
Vince about... Vince hated all over Marshall the entire time.
That's right. Yep. Thunder and Herd, not my favorite.
You're just bitter because Kane Madden came from there.
I really think that's totally it, too.
I can't I really do. You.
I really think that that's the problem. And it's really sad that that has clouded my vision, but I at least I'm big enough of a man to admit it that that's the problem. But today we're going to talk about quarter number two, and that is North Carolina, BYU, and Stanford. So a neutral site game, an away game, and a home game all in one quarter. So this one is very interesting, Brian, especially I think we can all assume worst case scenario, Notre Dame comes out of the first quarter 2-1. Best case scenario would be 3-0. So going into second quarter, it's going to be very interesting going on the road to North Carolina. North Carolina is ranked in the top 25 in most of the, you know, way too early polls and whatnot that I've seen. They're usually in the 20 to 25 range. I don't know if you've seen anything different, but
yeah, I've seen them in a few of them. They've been ranked there, and then BYU's definitely consistently in the top 25 as
right.
well. So,
right. So you've got two ranked teams here and then Stanford,
Which we never know what Stanford's going to be. It's a very intriguing second quarter, Vince. It really is. It could end up being kind of soft outside of BYU. Or can end up being the toughest quarter of the when you take all three teams into consideration, it could be the third quarter, it could be the fourth, you know, quarter as far as ranking them best or worst, or it could be the best because of the potential quality of all three teams. So
sure,
it's going to be very, very intriguing to see how this goes through.
A lot of question marks about quarter two for me. I mean, because I just don't know what the offense is going to be like for North Carolina, right? And they've recruited well on the defensive side of the ball at North Carolina. And so maybe they're going to be better defensively now that they got rid of, you know, certain people and certain things.
My favorite guy.
Yeah. So maybe they're going to be better defensively. I don't know, but North Carolina is a huge question mark for me. Because obviously Sam Howell is going to be tough to replace for them. He was their team offensively.
Yeah.
So how does that look? You know, what's the defense going to look like? It's just a lot of questions.
Yeah. Well, like when you just look at the entire quarter, Vince, the whole thing is just there's so much uncertainty about it, right? Like we know what BYU is going to be, right? They're one of the most solid teams on the schedule, meaning you kind of have an idea of who they're going to be. You have an idea of what they bring to the table. You have an idea of the toughness and the experience, and they return a lot of guys, and they're a good football team, right? You got to bring your A game to beat them the way that you should.
And outside of the way, you know, I was banging Marshall for their schedule and things of that nature, but like BYU, they scheduled the big boys. They're almost
completely
like
completely opposite argument.
They're
correct.
They're almost an honorary member of the Pac-12, number one, because right. they play a
well,
bunch of those.
And they would have played in the Pac. They would have played in the Pac-12 title game if they. Yeah. I mean, I'm looking at it now.
They were 5-1 against Power 5 teams last year.
Right, and they were 5-0 against Pac-12 teams.
Right, exactly.
Because their only loss to a Power 5 team was a road loss at number 5 Baylor.
Right. Right.
I mean, you know, right. And then they also lost to Boise State, and then they didn't lose again until they lost to UAB in a bowl game. I mean, they were a quality football. I mean, and they weren't just winning games. I mean, some of these games were convincing.
They were putting points on the board, too.
Yeah, I mean, it was 9 over Utah. It was 10 over Arizona State. It was they beat Virginia 66-49. The Washington State game, they only won by 2, but it was on the road.
Right.
And so – It was quite interesting to kind of see how their season went through. And then Stanford, it's like, you know, Stanford's just such a weird team because, you know, 2 years ago, it looked like they had turned things around, then they fall off again, you know, right. this year. And, you know, that you look at their schedule and it's like, with the exception of a couple games, I mean, most of their games weren't even competitive, Vince. I mean, 24-7 to K-State. They lost by 11 to UCLA, 18-3 to Washington State, 7 to Washington, who was terrible. Then they lost by 45 to Utah, 21 to Oregon State, 30 to Cal, and 31 to Notre Dame. And I mean, they weren't even competitive. But it's like they got some guys coming back. They, yeah. you know, it's such a strange situation, in my right. opinion. That you just don't know if they're going to be. So that's the intrigue of this quarter number two, right? Like Stanford has a lot of guys coming back, and they were super banged up late in the year last year. I mean, they were really banged up. A lot of guys coming back. So you look at it and say, you know, what are they going to be? And that's the thing. It's like with North Carolina, I think is an underrated team on the schedule this year. And then you look at BYU, they're one of the 3 or 4 best teams in the schedule. And then Stanford is an unknown. So that's why I say, Vince, there's so much uncertainty, but it really boils down to, as you were kind of alluding to earlier, is North Carolina. What yeah. is North yeah. Carolina going to be this
right.
year?
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
My wife is the coffee drinker in our house, so when I told her about trying out Trade Coffee, she was curious. When I told her that if she answered the survey Trade sent me, they could match her with brands she would like, she was downright skeptical. We ended up getting 3 different shipments from 3 regional coffee makers, and let me tell you, she was blown away. My coffee snob wife loved each and every new blend that she got. As a non-coffee drinker myself, I must admit, opening up the cabinet and getting a whiff of her most recent blend was aromatically pleasing. Trade sells the freshest roasted and ethically sourced beans from America's best independent roasters. They ship free to you and as often as you like, whole or ground. Whether you're a coffee connoisseur like my wife or just want a better daily cup, Trade's real coffee experts taste test over 400 roasts and use technology to match you to your ideal coffee based on your preferences and brewing method. Take the coffee quiz to get started. Trade Coffee guarantees you'll love your first bag or they'll replace it for free. And right now for Irish Breakdown listeners, Trade is offering new subscribers a total of 30 off your first order plus shipping when you go to drinktrade.com/Irish. That's more than 40 cups of coffee for free. Get started when taking their quiz at drinktrade.com/Irish and let Trade find you a coffee you'll love. That's drinktrade.com/Irish for $30 off. And don't forget, it's Father's Day coming up, and a Trade subscription is the perfect gift for the coffee lovers in your life. And they're a big unknown for me, and how they are, and Sam Howell, they got to replace Sam Howell. Well, they lost three starters in the offensive line. They also lost another 1,000-yard running back and Ty Chandler. They have a lot coming back on defense. When you're like, well, their defense stunk, true. But they did get rid of Jay Bateman. They bring back Gene Chizik. They hired a guy that was at Indiana last year, had been with Georgia for a couple of years before that. You know, a young coach that's got a pretty good reputation. And kind of see how they are. So it just – they're a very intriguing team when you look at standards.
Yeah, no, absolutely. North Carolina, yeah. And that's – and the North Carolina part of it too, being on the road after two – look, I'll say it – relatively easy wins at home, I would hope, against Cal and the thundering herd of Marshall. And so depending on what happens at Ohio State, are you going to be shell-shocked from the Ohio State game? Is it a close loss? Is it a win? Is it a blowout loss? You know, how are you feeling coming out of that game? And then you're not really going to be tested in games 2 and 3 against Marshall and Cal. And so if you're not going to be tested in those games, and then all of a sudden now you're going to go on the road to North Carolina, and you should be tested against North Carolina. They're still, you know, a Power 5 team. They're still, a team that can compete. They have recruited very well. But again, they're replacing their quarterback, but this is game 4 at that point. So what – you know, he's going to have some experience under his belt, whoever that happens to be. Let me see. Last time I checked, it's going to be a competition between Drake May and Jacoby Criswell. If everything I'm reading about North Carolina is accurate. And of course, they're going to be replacing a bunch of offensive linemen. So the offense is going to have to really take a step for North Carolina in order for them to be competitive in this game. But being on the road for Notre Dame, you know, their only other road experience this year up to that point is going to be Ohio State. And so is this road experience going to be different for Notre Dame? Yes, no question about it. How are they going to handle that? If they didn't handle the road experience at Ohio State very well, how are they going to handle the road experience against North Carolina? Those are all question marks. And defensively, I think that North Carolina is going to be better defensively, but there's so many questions that I'm just not sure what that road experience is going to be like for Notre Dame.
Yeah, I think the defense part is the interesting thing because, you know, yeah, I think I expect them to – they can't get worse, right?
Agreed.
The question is how much better do they get? Are they go from 32 points to 28 points?
Well, I think they're going to be counting on some young talent too, right?
Right. Well, I mean, but there's also a lot of guys ascending, like Miles Murphy is now – older, you know, I always get that there's two Murphys from North Carolina that came out in the same year. And I always, Miles is the one from that's at Clemson and Notre Dame plays both of them this year. And it's Miles. Okay. Yeah. It's Miles Murphy from North Carolina. So I see it's very, very confusing stuff. They're both Miles Murphy.
Okay. Oh, well, that's even
one
more.
Was a D end, one was a D tackle, right? And they came out same class. And Miles from Clemson was a 5-star. The other Miles is a 4-star, good football player. You know, he comes back. They have Tony Grimes coming back a corner, who last year as a sophomore was technically supposed to be a freshman because he reclassified, skipped the senior year for 2020 and got a chance. He's considered one of the top young corners in the country. They've got all their linebackers coming back. Yeah. They've got a lot of DB guys coming back. From a defense, it was terrible. So you got to ask yourself, okay, were they bad because they were poorly coached, or were they bad because they don't have talent? Well, as you mentioned, Vince, they have recruited that side of the ball pretty well the last couple of years.
Right.
So does the talent finally start taking over? And what you need from the defense is just be competitive, right? You don't got to be the, you know, Georgia or Alabama or Notre Dame on defense. You just got to don't stink. On defense.
True.
And then the other questions on the other side of the ball, Vince, is you're losing – not only you lose 3 stars of the offensive line, but you lost your line coach. Well, then Phil Longo goes out and hires a guy that worked with him in the past at other schools like Ole Miss and some other places, Jack Bicknell Jr. You say, okay, well, they got some guys that didn't start last year. that are now that have got some playing time in the offensive line. And we could talk about, like, they got two really good freshmen coming in at running back. So they're going to be good there. Josh Downs is arguably the best receiver Notre Dame's going to face all year. With all due respect to Jordan Addison, he's not better than Josh Downs, in my opinion. I mean, he's probably the third best receiver Notre Dame's going to face this year, which says a lot about the receivers that Notre Dame's going to face this year.
Trey Flowers is a pretty good receiver of BC, too.
Well, yeah, that's true. That's true. Zay Flowers is a real good football player. And then you got Jackson Smith and Jigba from Ohio State. And obviously, you've got Josh Downs, Jordan Addison. So it's going to be a very strong schedule full of good receivers.
Yeah.
But when you look at the when you look at Notre Dame's sort of the matchup, it really comes down to, like, the offensive line I'm not super concerned about because it was pretty bad last year and they still ran for 200 yards a game and all that. I think it's going to be a little better this year because they have, you know, some young guys coming up. It's not going to be worse than it was last year, but it's a scheme that can protect against the line. That air version of the air raid can protect against the
line. It's quick. Those are quick hitters.
Right.
And you don't need to sustain blocks.
Exactly. Yeah. They got a lot of talent coming back to the skill position. So then it comes down to the quarterback. And here's the thing I need people to understand what I'm about to say here. Everybody knows Sam Howell is my favorite quarterback in last year's draft class. Not necessarily saying the best, just my favorite. The guy that I like the most. But when you look at sort of what they have coming back, who wins the quarterback battle is ultimately going to determine whether or not North Carolina is going to be a threat to Notre Dame. And I say that because Drake May is a nice quarterback. You know, he's a good player, good solid young player. He's fine. Jacoby Criswell is the guy that worries me because he's got a really nice arm. He's a dual threat quarterback, but he's not a runner per se, right? Vince, like, he can run. You can do designed runs with him. He's got a nice thick frame.
Right.
He's a good athlete, but he's a runner. He is an effective runner, but he's not a runner. He wants to throw. He can hurt you with his arm. He had some really nice high school film coming out, and he's a talented player. Last year went 13 of 21 for 179 yards in very limited time. You know, he's the guy that I'm most concerned about when it comes to if he wins the starting quarterback job, he presents an even tougher test because he is a much more dangerous scrambler than Drake May. And I think he can hurt you very similarly to how Sam Howell hurt Notre Dame last year. And, you know, because look, if Sam Howell didn't run on Notre Dame last year, that game's not even close. I mean, he ran for over 100 yards against Notre Dame.
Absolutely.
And so until they prove otherwise, I'm going to constantly be concerned about Notre Dame being able to play teams that have mobile quarterbacks. And when you combine that with the talent they have at other positions, and again, like, they lost Ty Chandler. He got drafted. They don't have a ton coming back. I don't know if British Brooks is even – if he's on the team either. I know that he was considered a senior last year. I don't know if he's got a COVID year or not. You know, DJ Jones is okay, but they got two really talented young running backs coming in. George Pettway is one who I like quite a bit. So, and you know my stance, Vince. Running back's not a position you need experience. You just need talent. Right. You know, if you have the talent, you can play.
And
so
they got two freshmen coming
in,
right?
I think they'll be fine at running back. It really comes down to who starts at quarterback. And if Criswell wins the job, not by default, but wins the job, then I'm going to look at that and say, you know, hey, that group's got a chance to really, really, really do something here this year and be a surprise team. Because last year they were the hunted and they didn't handle it well. This year there's a decent amount of people dismissing them because, Vince, you had mentioned that you'd seen them in some top 25s. I haven't seen them in a ton. Like, they've been in some, but not a lot of them. And it's been mostly like BYU, USC, Clemson, and Ohio State. But I think they're getting overlooked a little bit this year because there's this assumption that because Sam Howell's gone, they're just going to take a step back. Well, I'm kind of making an opposite argument to what I made last year because, remember, we thought they were overrated going into last year. People had in the top 10 because it's like you can't lose 2,000-yard running backs, 1,000-yard receiver, and all these players, and you're going to be better the next year. That's silly. Well, it's kind of the same thing happening to them now, but I think because of some of the coaching turnover, that boosts them up a little bit. And the fact that there is a lot of other talent coming back, where last year, if the offense didn't play great, they were going to lose. There's not that same burden on them this year. So that's kind of my thing is this is going to be the first post-Ohio State game where we're really going to get a chance to see what this Notre Dame football team is made of.
I completely agree with that because they could almost, and I don't want to underestimate Marshall and Cal, but they could almost sleepwalk through those two games and still come out victorious. Now, of course, you and I will talk about those games and about what we see. And if that's the case, will have concerns, no question, coming out of games 2 and 3. But I don't see much of a way that Notre Dame isn't any worse than 2-1 coming out of the first three games. So going into week 4 with North Carolina, we're going to have games to watch of North Carolina. We're going to have an idea of who North Carolina is versus what Notre Dame brings to the table as well. But this is going to be the next big test after Ohio State for Notre Dame. Going on the road, a potential top 25 team at that point, and you're going to have, you know, a first-year starting quarterback that's going to have some games under his belt. And right. So we're going to know kind of what that offense is going to look like, et cetera.
Yeah, and they're coming off a bye, right? So they got Florida A&M in the opener. Then they've got two road games at App State, at Georgia State, then a bye. So they're you know, games. The App State, well, the App State game could be a test. App State's a good football team, but A&M's a tune-up game. Georgia State should be. If they're 2-1, it's like, okay, you know, they're not that great. But if they're 3-0 and they're coming off a bye and, you know, with a brand new starter quarterback, you get time to kind of rethink some things. It's going to be interesting to see how that gets handled, because it's really going to be their first big test. And look, there's going to be a little bit of a chip on their shoulder, because North Carolina gained some confidence against Notre Dame last year. Yes, Notre Dame won, but that was a game Notre Dame was supposed to blow them out. They were unranked. They were really struggling as a program, and Notre Dame just couldn't put them away.
Yeah,
and I think that North Carolina gained a lot of confidence in going into that game, because, you know, if you were, you know, I think they were what, 4-3 at that time. They had lost by 10 to Florida State, got blown out by Georgia Tech, and you're like, okay, well, this should be a team that Notre Dame dominates, and they didn't.
Yeah,
and they just could not stop Sam Howell. Like, well, Sam Howell's not back. Well, Notre Dame also had some scheme problems in that game last year. Remember, they turned, they had like that pick route that should have got called but didn't get called for a big play. They had that blown coverage by Ramon Henderson that resulted in another big play. We could talk about, well, you clean the scheme things up and you're gonna fix that. That's all true. But in North Carolina's minds, they're thinking, man, we can play with them.
Absolutely.
Right. Like if we tackled, but because here's what they're saying to themselves, something similar to what we've talked about Notre Dame. Boy, if Notre Dame would have tackled better against this team and that team, it's a different story. Well, if they tackled better, Kyren Williams is brought down for a 3-yard loss at the 3-yard line, not running for a 91-yard touchdown.
Exactly.
Right? Yeah. I mean, now that may be true or not true. Right. I mean, it could just be that he's a way better player than you.
You spin it.
That's how they view it in their minds.
Absolutely.
And so they're going to come into this game with a lot of confidence. They're not going to be intimidated by Notre Dame.
Especially if they're 3-0 coming off of a bye. Right.
And even if Notre Dame's 3-0, I mean, they're not going to be intimidated by Notre Dame, because it's going to be very much, well, no one thinks we're going to win anyway.
Right.
And this is the kind of game where I feel like North Carolina is dangerous. Now, should Notre Dame beat them? Yes. What frustrates me, Vince, is whenever you talk positive about an opponent, you get those people jumping, well, you're just saying that to, you know, cover. No, we're not just going to get out here and talk about every point. Well, Notre Dame's better than them. They should kill them by 30. There's other fanboy shows that you can watch for that, right?
Yes, there are.
The fact is that if you don't properly appreciate an opponent, then you can't properly appreciate the victories, even the convincing ones.
Yes, absolutely.
Well, of course they beat that team by 30. That team's no good. Well, that takes away from, wow, they beat that team by 30. That's a really good win, right? And so that's kind of what the point of this is. But this is a game Notre Dame should win. And if they win, which they should, you go into your first bye week either 4-0 and red hot, or 3-1 and on your way to overcoming that first loss.
Yeah.
And then as you come out of the bye, most likely, Vince, you're going to be facing a team that's probably ranked, I would think, and a team that, in talking about BYU, and a team that, in my opinion, has a chance to be your first, sort of your first notch on your belt of, okay, what is this team going to be? Because when you look at BYU coming into that game,
got some tough games. They
have 5 games under their belt, right?
Yeah.
They play at UCF,
right?
And there's 2 games they have, and then they play home against Wyoming, home against Utah State. Those should all 3 be wins, right? Well, games 2 and 3 are home against Baylor and at Oregon.
Those are tough ones.
They got to go 1-1 against those two teams. If they go 1-1 against those two teams, they're going to be ranked when Notre Dame plays them. So if you're a Notre Dame fan, you're rooting for BYU to win at least one of those games. Then after Notre Dame, they host Arkansas.
Mm-hmm.
So props to Baylor and Arkansas for being willing to play at BYU. Seriously, I'm being serious. Like, there are not a lot of teams from Power 5, especially SEC schools, that will go on the road and play a non-conference. And props to Arkansas for doing that. Props to Baylor for doing that, because BYU is a good football team. So that's a very interesting one, Vince, because this could be your first game that gives you a chance to kind of get that ranked win under your belt if you lose the opener Ohio State. If you win the opener against Ohio State, this is your first chance to kind of solidify, to say, hey, that wasn't a fluke. You can't dismiss it because it was the first game. You can't write all those kind of things off. We are good because look what we just did to BYU on a neutral field that's a lot closer to their home state than sure. It is to ours.
Here's how I feel about this kind of two-game stretch, right? I think there's a really good chance, that North Carolina is undefeated going into the game with Notre Dame, right? And there's a chance that if they're ranked in the preseason and they go 3-0, they're still going to be ranked. And then you get BYU, and you just outline how they need to be ranked, right? What they need to do with their schedule. Okay, they need to win those three games. They need to go 1-1, and I think that they will be ranked as well. I think this, regardless of what happens in game one for Notre Dame and Ohio State and all that, right? As long as it's somewhat competitive, right? This is where Notre Dame can start to take off a little bit. Like, I feel like this is a bit of a launching point in games 4 and 5 for Notre Dame. Because, again, I think they're going to beat, you know, in games 2 and 3, they're going to win those two games against Marshall and Cal. This is an opportunity where you get two ranked teams, potentially. You get those wins, and they could be convincing wins too, depending on how things go. This could launch Notre Dame into a really good place with the rest of the season. And it's going to prop them up, because then you've got Stanford, and we're going to talk about that in a minute, but I still feel like that's going to be a win for Notre Dame too. So like this quarter can almost make or break Notre Dame's season, but I think it has every potential to really launch them into the rest of the season.
Right. Because when you look at the rest of Notre Dame's schedule, right, after they play BYU, there's Stanford, which we'll talk about in a minute, UNLV, and Syracuse on the road at the Carrier Dome. And I don't care what they renamed it. I'm not calling it the JMA Wireless Dome. It's the Carrier Dome.
I didn't even know that. Okay.
Yeah, it's the Carrier Dome. You're right, Vince. If you can win those two games over two quality opponents to varying degrees, I think BYU is better than North Carolina.
I do too.
And the other thing is they're completely different styles. Like North Carolina is about scheme and tempo and plays. BYU is play some tempo on offense, but BYU is a physical football team, even offensively. And so you win those two games and you're like, okay, you've really got some confidence going into that stretch. And when you look at BYU especially, look, the reality is I'm gonna have this conversation unless BYU goes out and just gets blasted by Baylor and Oregon. I'm gonna continue this mantra. This is a good football team.
Yeah.
This is a team that went 5-1 against Power 5 opponents last year and brings back almost everybody from that team. Now, they lost their running back, who was really good last year, but he was – I think he was drafted really late in the draft, if he was drafted at all. I'd have to go look at that. But they bring back – it's something silly like 14 of their top 15 tacklers or something like that from last year. It's insane how many kids they have coming back this year, because and their defense was up and down. How about that, right? Gave up 24.8 points a game. Looked good against Utah. Looked good against Arizona State. Looked good against Washington State. Looked bad against Baylor. Looks terrible against Virginia. Gave up a lot of points to USC. Didn't look good against UAB. But then had some other games. You're like, wow, this defense, they play good football, right? And so – you don't, but you bring everybody back, and they were young last year on defense. For, you know, eligibility wise, they were young last year. I mean, their top two tackle for loss guys were both freshmen. Then their fourth and fifth tackle for loss guys were sophomores. You look at tackles, their first four leaders and tacklers were a freshman, sophomore, sophomore, freshman. Now, again, a lot of those guys had COVID years and redshirt years. I don't think they were like true freshmen, but they were still younger, inexperienced guys. And I'm looking like, actually, I was mistaken on that. I think it's 15 of their first 16 guys come back from last year's team. Let me just look through that. Yeah, they had one guy drafted this year. 15 of their first 16 of their top 16 tacklers from last year are set to return this year. So they're going to come back. And they're going to be a tough, good, quality football team. Now, should Notre Dame beat them? Yes. but is this going to be a much more competitive game potentially than people think? Yeah. It's one of those games that I look at, Vincent, and I say, this is just a get the W game, in my opinion.
Okay.
Just get, because it's going to be hard to get your team fired up for BYU. Let's just be honest. I don't care where they're ranked. It's going to be difficult. There's these players don't understand the history of this matchup, and it's not a long history, but they've played some very competitive games in the past.
It's funny you say that, because this is not a difficult game for me to get hyped up for, and not because of where
you grew up in the era where BYU could go smack some people.
Yeah, and look, even what they've done over the last couple of years, they've gotten a lot of press and a lot of airtime about what they've been able to do now. I think a lot of the stuff that they that has been said about them, they're beating down on some teams that, you know, aren't great or whatever.
2 years ago is 100,000% true.
Right. Yes. Exactly. But I mean, if you look at, like, again, last year's schedule and then this year's schedule, they're not afraid to be, you know, scheduling certain guys. So I don't think it's going to be that hard for them to get up for this game, especially with the head coach. And I think he knows how to push the right buttons emotionally. At least we think so. But yeah, and it's going to be a Shamrock Series game, and you have all that. I don't know how much of that means to the kids. I don't know.
Vegas is an interesting aspect. Like, how fired up are they for that? But here's the other intriguing aspect of this. This is their last year as an independent.
Yeah,
so they're going to the Big 12 the next year.
Oh, I forgot.
So
about
there's
that.
A lot on the table for BYU for that too. Get yourself some dubs for against Power 5 teams in advance of going to the Big 12, because then that helps. Like, here's my thing. If you're BYU as head coach, and you don't say this to the players, but this is what you're saying to your coaches. We're going to go to the Big 12, and yeah, we can compete with these teams, but it's one thing to do it, you know, 5-6 times. It's another thing to do it like 9 times, right? And that's the reality when you play in the Big 12 is, you know, you play 9 conference games. Now, I assume that's going to be the same when they expand to 14 teams, but – when it was 10 teams, you played everybody. So obviously you're not going to play everybody now that they've expanded and added, I think they added Houston, Cincinnati, UCF, and BYU, correct?
Sounds right. I remember Cincinnati and BYU for sure.
Yeah, I think that's the case. Let me go.
That's happening in 23, like that quickly?
23, wow. Yeah, it's happening in 23. So let me just go make sure I look. Yeah, it's Cincinnati, UCF, BYU and Houston. BYU and Houston make a ton of sense. I don't think Cincinnati and UCF make a ton of sense. Football, like geographically, but they make sense. You know, Cincinnati's a good program. UCF's a huge market.
Yeah, it feels like a lot of the conferences are going away from their geographic footprint these days.
Right. Anyway. Agree.
I mean, started on the Big Ten.
So, and at least they don't have a geographical name. That's the other thing.
That's it's a like, good it's point.
Not like the South conference that's now getting a bunch of teams from the Southwest in their league, whatever. But you look at it, Vince, and it's the, but if you know, we're joining the Big 12, if we can knock off, if we I'm looking at it from BYU's point of view, if we play Baylor, Arkansas, Oregon, and Notre Dame, if we can knock off 2 to 3 of those teams, we're going to give ourselves a huge recruiting push.
Absolutely.
And you know, there's a lot at stake for BYU this year. And you look at their schedule, there's a lot of games where it's like, okay, we talked about Baylor and Oregon. There's Notre Dame. There's Arkansas. They play at Liberty. They play at Boise State. They play at Stanford. So I guess that's 5 Power 5 teams. You've got to go 3-2 against those teams, in my opinion, and beat the other teams you're supposed to beat. But, you know, at Liberty won't be a cakewalk even without Malik Willis. At Boise State won't be a cakewalk. I mean, you play East Carolina. So it's going to be interesting, Vince. And this isn't you talk about all the guys coming back. Jaren Hall's a good quarterback. He's got weapons to throw to. They're not real super athletes, but they're great route runners. They have great hands. They compete for the ball. They have a physical offensive line. They got everybody coming back on defense. It's a really interesting situation. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah, I'm excited about it. And I think The aspect of playing in that new stadium, I think, is going to be part of it. I think that the excitement level for Notre Dame is going to be big. Somebody said something about the, you know, playing in Vegas and all that. It's not like the guys are going to go out gambling the night before. Right. Like, they're going to be in a hotel. They're going to go to the game and then they're going to leave. It's not like the NFL where they have free time. So
yeah.
It doesn't matter that it's in Vegas. The fact that it's in a really nice stadium, in an NFL stadium. Yeah. Now that's, I think, something to look forward to if you're a player, but the fact that it's, you know, they're not hitting the strip, you know what I mean?
I would hope not. And if they are, then this team has bigger problems than
Agreed. You
know, playing Las Vegas.
I don't think they're going to be able to, allowed to get out of the hotel long enough to do that, but that's another conversation. Maybe, they'll go to a show or something as a team,
you and I both know, Vince, it ain't that hard to get out of a hotel if you're dead set on it, you know, but it just depends on, you know, what's your leadership like.
Exactly.
Do you have the leadership? Do you have the focus as a team to say the player level? 100%. 100%. It's got to be the players. The players have got to be able to say, hey, listen, we're getting in town. You know, they'll probably get in town like Friday, like normal, you know, Friday afternoon. Hey, everybody, listen, well, this is a business trip, right? We're not here we're not here to go see there. We're not here to go to this. We're not here to go to that. We're not here to see this thing. We're not here to do this. We're here to handle some business. Yep. Right. And if we do what we need to do, we'll come back this summer as a group and we'll have some fun. Right.
Right.
But we'll put all of our NIL money to a pool and we'll take a Team Vegas trip in the off season if we handle our business. Right.
And then of course there's a fine line between it being a business trip and being college football. We've talked about that a million times. Because there has to be some emotion involved. But
the business trip is not that. To me, I'm not talking about the nameless, faceless opponent thing. The
Brian Kelly business trip
is we're here to handle some business, right? And that is fire. That is passion. It's not a business. It's a business trip. We're here to take care of business. We're here to take care of BYU. We're not here to have fun and the party and do all that other kind of stuff. That's what I'm referring to.
Yes.
And that's what the focus needs to be. And if then there's not a dang thing the coaches can do about that.
Right.
I mean, they can to a degree, but you as coaches, you can't have the coaches up till 3 o'clock in the morning making sure nobody's sneaking out of the room. Right. I mean, it's going to come down to the leadership of the football team and the focus of this football team to say, hey, look, let me tell you something. If one of y'all steps out of line, the coaches are going to be the least of your problems. You know, that's great. That's what leadership is.
Yeah, I could not agree more. And I think there is leadership.
That's what we're going to learn. Yeah, that's what we're going to learn about this football team.
Yeah, so. No question.
And then there's the final one, Vince.
Yeah, the final one is Stanford. And Stanford is – I mean, look, Notre Dame has dominated Stanford recently. There's no question about it. And I still think – it's not like Stanford's going to go, you know, circling the drain. I don't think Stanford will ever be in that, you know, scenario. So they're going to be –
What does that mean, Vince? What do you mean by that?
Well, I don't think that they're
– honest question. I don't know what you mean by
that. No. I don't think that they're going to get to a point where they're going to be a perennial 2- and 3-win team. You know what I mean? Where they just can't recruit anymore. Yeah.
They're not far off, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I just – I'm going to give them a little bit.
3 and 4 games in 2 of the last 3. I mean, you could say they've won 4 less games the last 3 years, but that would be cheating because they went 4-2 in 2020. Yeah, right. But they went 4-8 2 years ago and went 3-9 last year.
Yeah. I just feel like I want to give them the benefit of the doubt that they're going to be able to rebound at least enough to be a 500 ball club. You know what I mean? Now,
yeah, I hope.
Again,
I hope.
And we've talked about it a bunch, right? I don't really necessarily want Stanford on the schedule anymore. Like, this game does not excite me anymore. It really never did, to be perfectly honest with you. I understood it in the past, you know, getting that game out in California, but I just don't think that that's necessary anymore, to be honest with you. And there's a plenty of other teams on the West Coast that you could schedule where that could still fulfill.
Like
that.
We've talked, and we'll talk about this. We'll have a schedule, like an ideal schedule thing, and that's important. Like, you know, mix up the West Coast trip, right? Play UCLA a couple years, Make a return trip to Berkeley, which I wouldn't recommend, but you know, go play Washington, go play Arizona State. You know, there's things you can do if you're dead set on playing out west, then play one of those teams in a home at home or in a neutral field or something. Need to play Stanford. And the only thing that attracted me was the fact that both teams were striving for excellence, right? And they're both academic schools and all that. But Stanford clearly doesn't take football that seriously. And that's fine. But you're not helping Notre Dame anymore. You're just – it's like it used to be for a while there in the Kelly era where, like 2012, when they beat Stanford in 2012, like that was a springboard to a great season. It's like once they slayed that dragon, it's like nobody else is going to touch them.
That was the one in the rain and all that too, right? Yeah.
The overtime one where they had the fourth down stand at the end of the game and Tommy comes off the bench and, you know, whenever goes down and leads them to an overtime victory. And then, you know, 2014, you had a great comeback victory. And it's just, it was one of those things where it's like, you know, it meant something to beat Stanford. And now it's just like, you're pounding Stanford in the last game of the year while everybody else is playing in some rivalry game, right, and you're playing a team that stinks.
Yes.
And the thing about bouncing back, Vince, I hope Stanford bounces back. I've always kind of liked David Shaw as a coach.
Yeah, me too.
He's gotten real – it's gotten real stale, though.
Right.
And the offense is just soft. They can't run the – I mean, their rushing numbers in recent years have just been
– which has never been like their calling card.
Believe.
Like, their calling card was running the ball, yes, putting offensive lineman in at tight end, and just – pushing it
and,
up.
And feet. I think we've talked about this before, but it was weird because it just came out of nowhere.
Right.
Like in from 15 to 17, this is what, well, really, if you look at, like, he took over in what, 11 was his first year? David Shaw's first year was 11, right? They averaged 210 yards rushing. They had a 1,300 yard rusher. 2012, they had a 1,500 yard rusher. 2013, they had a 1,700 yard rusher. 2014, they didn't run the ball that well and individually, but they still averaged 158.8 yards per game. That was their down year.
Yeah.
And then they had some injuries and all that. Then the next year, you know, you have Christian McCaffrey breaks out, and he goes for 2,019 yards. Then the next year, he goes for 1,600 yards, and Bryce Love goes for over 700. So your top two backs combined for over 2,300 yards. And 17, Bryce Love – goes for over 2,100 yards, and 19 touchdowns, and then all of a sudden the bottom falls out. Yeah. The next year he only has 739 yards. They only average 107.9 yards per game. The next year they fall down to 105.5. The next year they go up to 132.8, and then this past year they averaged 86.8 yards per game as a team. And it's like it went from one of the best running teams in the country to you guys suck at running the football. And it's bizarre. It just doesn't make any sense. Like what happened? I mean, they were known for what? Really physical football and great defense. And yep, last year they were complete opposite of that. They were soft and their defense was terrible. And he won't do anything about it. That's the confusing thing. Like their defense has been so bad in recent years and he won't do anything about it. And that's the thing that really blows my mind, Vince, is like it's kind of like, you know, we're getting on Brian Kelly for not firing coaches who were at least doing an okay job, but not a good enough job for Notre Dame. And you look at Stanford, and Lance Anderson has been there for years and their defense is abysmal. And they gave up 32.4 points per game last year. Gave up 31.7 the year before that. Gave up 29.8 the year before that. Those numbers make Brian Van Gorder's tenure look good. I'm serious.
I know you are. That's what's funny about it.
Like, how does he still have a job?
Right. Right.
If and you're that's serious, the problem. That's serious. The problem. Yeah. David Shaw is just, I don't know if it's like apathy. I don't know if it's like he's got the same stuff on David Shaw that Brian Van Gorder had on Brian Kelly. I'm joking. It doesn't make sense, but it's like you're not serious about being competitive when you're allowing that. Because it's right. What do we gotta say, Vince? You either teach it or you allow it, right? Mm-hmm. Like things like that. And for a defensive coordinator to have that little success year after year after year, and you do nothing about it, it's puzzling, mm-hmm, to say the least. It's puzzling. And you said that you think they may bounce back. I hope they do. But the concern is for me is
anything else. I don't have a whole lot of empirical evidence that says right. that. But, you know, the Stanford that has been around most of my adult life is a team that's competitive. And it's a team that, right, you know, puts out really good tight ends and puts out offensive linemen.
They will have a good tight end this year.
Smash mouth. And it's like, yeah, I wish for Notre Dame's sake that Stanford team was around, because – I'm okay with a physical team because it shows me what my team can do. You right. know what I mean?
Like, it was a great measuring stick. That's a great point, Vince. Stanford's always a measuring stick for who you were as a football program.
Absolutely. And that right now, the Stanford that we have seen the past couple of years, they don't do anything for the schedule for Notre Dame.
No.
They don't. And that's disappointing.
If anything, they hurt your schedule because yes, they've been agree. So bad.
Absolutely.
And, you know, it's like we talked about Nebraska, who was also 3-9 last year. And I've talked about how I really think Nebraska could be pretty good, because you look at all their games, their worst loss was by 9 points. I mean, they literally were a play here, a play there away from being an 8-9, maybe even a 10-win football team last year. But when you look at Stanford, Vince, it's like, no, they weren't really in any of those games except for really Washington State. I mean, they lost by Washington. by a touchdown, but it's just like all their other games were not only like not competitive, like, you know, that they weren't in a chance to win it late, but they weren't even competitive, Vince. Right. I mean, it was really embarrassing. And I thought I was right on this, but yeah, I was right on this. Stanford scored 13 points in the fourth quarter against Washington in that game where they lost 20-13. I was like, I thought I remember like they were down most of that game. They were down 12-3 going to that game.
Not competitive is what you're saying.
Yeah. Then they took a lead in the fourth quarter, 13-12. And then, of course, they give up a, you know, touchdown drive to Washington at the end to lose it. So, I mean, they had a chance to win it, but they just aren't good.
Is this accurate? I want to throw this up there. I mean, not that you have a list in front of you, but like that is crazy to me that would be the case. Yeah. And it's nothing against David Shaw. It's $8.5 million a year is a heck of a lot of money.
I'm looking it up now.
The leader of a team that you don't have a whole lot of faith in or a whole lot of support.
According to an article out right now, he is the sixth highest paid coach in college football at $8.925 million per year.
$9 million.
Now he lives in California, so he's only getting like $3 million of that, right? So, I mean, and factors in as well. You know, but no, I mean, it's just one of those things, Vince, where he earned that kind of early in his career, but he hasn't been that guy in a while.
Right.
And that's the, I mean, because if you look at like the last three games against Notre Dame, like Stanford dominated Brian Kelly for most of his tenure. And if you look at Kelly's record against Stanford, he was 5-6 against Stanford, won his last three, but he only beat, I think, he was three and six against Stanford teams with a winning record. Like their last two teams they beat were 4-8 and 3-9. And they beat them convincingly. Now the 18 win was a 9-win Stanford team, and you pounded them pretty good. At the time they were ranked in the top 10. And then of course you lost in 2017, you lost in 2016, you lost in 2015, a game you should have won. You know, but to your point, Stanford went through a stretch here where they beat Notre Dame, including the last year of the Weiss era. Like Charlie and Ty all beat Stanford. I mean, they had won 7 straight against Stanford. And then Charlie lost that last game, and then Stanford won a total of 7 out of 9 games against Notre Dame. I mean, dominated that series.
Yeah.
And then Notre Dame won the last 3. And so, it hasn't even been close.
Right, I mean, that's the thing. It hasn't been competitive, and it's definitely not the measuring stick that it used to be. Yeah. A win against Stanford used to be a really big deal. You know, like you said, the launching point for the 2012 season. I mean, that overtime win, that was huge. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And they've had really good quarterback. You know, they obviously had the Luck kid, and they've had those running backs. And, you know, you've outlined all of it, and it's disappointing to me. And I think it might be, again, wishful thinking that Stanford rebounds and comes back. But if they're going to continue to be on Notre Dame's schedule, then as an analyst, I need to see Stanford come back. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, it's not even a data point for me on the Notre Dame schedule anymore. It's mm-hmm. a waste of our time, essentially. It's like playing a MAC school.
Yeah.
That's disappointing to me.
It's like playing Vanderbilt or
– It's unfortunate.
It is.
I hope that they get that.
If they don't show signs of life – see, here's the thing. The Notre Dame Stanford, I believe, let me just look because I want to make sure I'm correct on this. Yeah. This is the last year, 2023 is the last year that they're on the schedule, I believe.
Okay. Interesting.
So I'm sorry, 2024 is the last year that they're on the schedule. So there's 2 more years of Stanford being on the schedule after this. If you're Jack Swarbrick, you've got to really look seriously about what they do the next 2 years. Because if they don't get better, you cannot extend that series, in my opinion.
Rotate that last game.
But
it's only every other year, too, because you're going to keep USC, I would imagine. I don't see that one going anywhere. So you're only talking about the odd years, the 23, 25, 27. You're only looking at the odd years where, okay, if you want to continue to finish in California, if that's a thing that's really important to you, there are a lot of quality teams on the West Coast that you can finish with.
Yeah.
And I mean, you can even stay in the Pac-12. You can do an Oregon or a UCLA. I mean, there's options on the table if you want to end the season in California.
Right. Or the West Coast in general. I mean, because I think there's at least going to be a 2-year hiatus Because when I look at the 2025 schedule, Notre Dame has Texas A&M, Purdue, Arkansas already, and USC already scheduled on top of, and Navy on top of their five opponents ACC. That are in the ACC. So you have two games left. So you have Texas A&M, Purdue, at Arkansas, home against USC, Navy, then you're at BC, at Miami, at Pitt, and you have home games against NC State and Syracuse. Yeah. That's a pretty challenging schedule. Do you want to add Stanford onto it if they're good or bad? Right. Or do you want to say, let's go schedule some team, you know, some MAC team? Because they're going to need to schedule that kind of a Marshall, a Western Michigan on that 2020.
That. I didn't hear that kind of a game yet.
Right, so, right. Especially if you believe that Lincoln Riley is going to turn USC around, it's even more reason to make sure that that's more of a winnable game. So I definitely think they at least take a 2-year hiatus. And then the next year, they have 10 scheduled the next year as well. They've got Wisconsin, Purdue, at USC, at Navy, and then home against Michigan State at some point in time. So you've got a 10. You've got a 10-game schedule with Wisconsin, Purdue, USC, and Michigan State already on it. Do you really want to add – you know what I mean? Right. So, like, I could definitely see Notre Dame and Stanford taking a hiatus. And honestly, at this point in time, it needs to.
Cool with it. I really am. Especially if Stanford's not going to rebound. If their ceiling right now is 500, it doesn't do anything for Notre Dame.
Right. Like, DC Irish says, I like the Stanford games. It's a good rivalry. It helps beef up the schedule if they're good. Agree. And 5 years ago, I would have never dreamed of having the conversation we're having now, DC. Exactly. That's the thing. Is like, I agree with this point completely, Vince. The problem is they're not good, and they haven't been good for a few years, and they haven't done anything to make us think that they're doing anything to get good. That's the problem. You know, you have a head coach who just refuses to get rid of bad coaches. They don't work on a recruiting trail. And, you know,
where did that happen before?
Oh yeah.
I don't know. I guess it's deja vu thing going.
Oh. Yeah. So yeah, it's not a good, but again, during that time when, I mean, you're kind of joking about Brian Kelly, right? Yes. But Notre Dame still won.
Right. You're absolutely right.
Because they still won. Right. And, you know, we're ticked about Brian Kelly going 10-3 and 11-2 and 10-2 and stuff like that. Like, they're 3-9 and 4-8. I mean, you know, and when Brian Kelly went 4-8, Notre Dame made big changes. A lot of them weren't up to Brian Kelly. That's the difference.
Nailed it.
Jack Swarbrick was like, no, this isn't going to continue. Brian Kelly wanted to keep Brian Van Gorder for the remainder of that season. Right. Jack Swarbrick said, no bueno. Right.
And that's not happening. A farm.
Right. There's no exactly. Jack Swarbrick drove the push to bring in Chip Long and Mike Elko and guys like that. That's not happening at Stanford. Exactly. They're just letting David Shaw do whatever the heck he wants to do, and which is nothing, basically. And it's unfortunate because I think he's a brilliant coach. I think he's had a ton of success there. I just don't know if he's like bored or what. My hope is that he gets rejuvenated because I do think it's good for the Pac-12 when Stanford is good and Stanford plays like they used to play. Because it gives you that physical measuring stick, to your point, Vince, and it gives them another. I think the Pac-12 needs to be better. I think it's good for college football, and the Pac-12 is a good conference. It doesn't have to be great, but it's a good. It's never in my lifetime been a great conference. I don't remember, but there was always at least one
team,
potentially great team in there, and there was always kind of like a depth of quality. You know, Mike Bellotti had Oregon as a quality program for a number of years. Even before they became the Oregon of the 2000s, they were a quality program. There was a couple years in the early 90s under Don James and Jim Lambright where Washington was a national title contender for several years. I mean, they beat Miami 1 year when Miami finished number two. I thought they should have won the national title that year. You know, I mean,
yeah. Clan kept firing.
Yeah, you had the Mark Brunell. Who was the other quarterback they had on? It was Mark Brunell and Billy Joe Hobert, right? Wasn't that the two man? They had Hugh Millen was a quarterback on that team. They had the Heward brothers, both played quarterback there. You know, you had Rick Neuheisel was the coach there for a hot second. You know, like they had some quality teams at Washington. And then, you know, UCLA under Terry Donahue never had an elite team, but they always had good teams. You know, and there was always at least, you know, there was the stretch under what was the name, the defensive coach that did a, that had Arizona for a few years, was really good. They had the Desert Swarm and all that kind of stuff. Dick Tomey, right? I mean, and then of course USC. And so the Pac-12 was at least like a quality conference. You had the couple years when Oregon State was really good, with Jonathan Smith was the quarterback. You had Dennis Erickson there, if you remember that. Notre Dame fans remember that, sadly. You know, with Chad Johnson and TJ Houshmandzadeh and Ken, no, I was going to say Ken Oxendine. It was Ken Simonton was a running back. Ken Oxendine was at Virginia Tech. But like they had some, there was always like some good teams in the Pac-12. It was never a great conference, but there were some good teams in there. And lately it's just been just kind of bad. And so it's good for the Pac-12. So whether it's Stanford or somebody else, but I do think Stanford being good adds a, an element to the Pac-12 that it just doesn't have. So, but if they do bounce back, like you say, Vince, that's North Carolina being what I think they're going to be, and Stanford bouncing back like you hope that they do, is going to determine where this quarter falls on the overall schedule.
I think realistically, you know, North Carolina is obviously going to be undefeated when Notre Dame plays them. I think that that's very possible. And I think BYU is going to be ranked, and I don't think Stanford's going to rebound completely this season. So you're talking about two pretty solid opponents, two ranked opponents, and an opportunity for Notre Dame to, you know, make a statement here in the second quarter. Because now you're going in, you're going to have half your season out of the way at this point. I think, you know, realistically, you're going to be 5-1, you know, 6-0 obviously is ideal. 5-1 is the floor for me at this point. It really is. And so I think that that's a very realistic record. And if you're 5-1 and it was a competitive loss to Ohio State, then you're in a pretty good shape moving into the second half or the third quarter of the schedule. I really do. And the second quarter can just launch them up even more on.
Yeah, because your next two games coming out of it are games you just steamroll. Yes. So it'd be nice to have some momentum. Here's another thing we didn't talk about during the show, Vince, but this is why I love IB members, because they really think about things and they think outside the box. And Toe Jam says, we have two people. DC Irish says the farm has been horrible to play on for a long time, and they need to fix that field. And then Toe Jam says the farm is like playing on green painted sand. That's another reason why I would drop Stanford.
Yeah.
I mean, that is, to me, an unsafe field to play on. I don't think it's a coincidence Stanford has been ravaged by injuries in the last few years, and that's their home field. Right. I mean, just the look, your body's not meant to slip that way constantly. You know, that's how you get pulls and tears and things and breaks and things like that, is when you plant this way and all your momentum goes that way, and then the other part of your body goes this way, and that's how things can happen. It's not safe to play on that field. And so, to me, it's like, if you're not serious about fixing this field, then we're just not I can't justify putting my kids into that environment anymore. Yep. I'm sorry.
And I wonder, honestly, because you, like you said, after the next two seasons, that rivalry is going away, the series is going away. I wonder if that had something to do with it.
And
I really do.
One of them is at Stanford, I believe. Next year's at Stanford, but then the final game in 2024 is at home. So two of the next three are at home. So, yeah, I mean, you control this. You don't need Stanford. Stanford needs Notre Dame a whole lot more than Notre Dame needs Stanford.
Absolutely agree with
that. And I don't think Stanford cares much about that series anymore either. They care about that series when they're beating Notre Dame. They don't care about losing to Notre Dame.
Absolutely.
So, I think it's time for that rivalry to go. To be honest,
and I'm happy. It looks like the writing is on the wall for at least a 2-year hiatus.
Yeah.
Hopefully further along the line than that. But the writing is on the wall, and I'm happy about that. I really am.
Agree. So that's this quarter, Vince. So I think your point is correct. I think they've got to go 3-0 in this. And obviously, they've got to go 3-0. I will say this. If Notre Dame beats Ohio State and goes 11-1, I don't think that loss will be to Clemson or USC. I think it'll come in this quarter. Mm. And now, I'm not saying they're going to lose a game in this quarter, but it's kind of like, you know, you always have that stub your, you know, you have that big win and you have that stub your toe moment. It happens to a lot of teams. I mean, Alabama, you know, I mean, Nick Saban has lost more games to Hugh Freeze than he's lost to Kirby Smart, right? I mean, think about that for a second. You know what I mean? You talk about Clemson losing at Syracuse, you know, losing against Pitt in 2016. Games like this tend to happen. And, you know, it's just
point.
Yeah, we'll kind of see how it goes, but I think that's the other part of this deal too, Vince, is this schedule is such that I'm not sure if they beat, I wouldn't be surprised, I should say, if they do beat Ohio State and they're going to have a loss, I think it comes from this quarter, which, to my point, is if they beat Ohio State and run the table in this quarter is when I'll start thinking this team can run the table. It'll have to be that, in my opinion. Have to be something like that.
No, that's fair. I think this is going to be a fun quarter for Notre Dame. Like I said, you've got one of everything. You've got a home game, you've got an away game, and you've got a neutral site game. And so you're going to get a good idea. Because, again, when this quarter's over, you're halfway through the season. So we're going to have a really good idea who this Notre Dame team is in a lot of ways. And we can, you know, go down the list of the ways that, you know, questions we're going to get answered at this point. But as a team, we're going to know a lot about Notre Dame, and yeah, we're going to know a lot about how they got to this, to 5-1, if that ends up being what they are, right? Or whatever the record happens to be at that time. But we're going to have a lot of questions answered at that point. There's still going to be some lingering questions out there, of course. There's more big games to come, but we're going to know a lot about this team after six games. No, yes, question about it.
Yes.
And I'm excited about this quarter. I really am, because yeah, I think even more so than in the first quarter, I think we get even more questions answered in the second quarter. Absolutely.
Yeah. And that's one of the questions that DC Irish asked. It says, what loss do you guys think would be best for Notre Dame if they finish 11-1, big win and a loss against weaker teams, or loss against big team and win against everyone else? I'm a big believer, Vince, that I care more about the wins than the losses. And we've seen that shown out in college football. I mean, Ohio State, the first year that Ohio State won a national title, they lost to a 7-6 Virginia Tech team at home by 14. But they got in because they pounded Michigan State. It was a top 10 team at the time. They pounded Wisconsin. They pounded Michigan. We saw Clemson get in 2016, Vince, because even though they lost, like, it was like second to last game of the year, if I remember correctly. It was like late in the season. Yeah, it wasn't second to last game. It was third to last game of the regular season. They lost on November 12th to Pitt. And then in 2007, and that was not a good Pitt team, but that year they beat Auburn on the road, who was ranked. They beat Virginia Tech, who was ranked. They beat Florida State, who was ranked, on the road. They beat Louisville with Lamar Jackson that year. Like, it was the big wins that helped them overcome, not a great loss to Pitt. Pitt was like, you know, top 25 caliber team, but they weren't great. 2017, Clemson got the number one seed despite losing at a 4-8 Syracuse team. Why? Because they beat number 10 Auburn. They beat a ranked Virginia Tech team on the road. They beat a ranked NC State team on the road in 2017. So I've always believed that you get in because of who you beat, not because you were really good against that one team that beat you.
Right.
You know, justification. If your playoff resume is around how well you lost, that's not a playoff resume. It's got to be built around the teams you beat. So to the point of the question, I would rather they not lose any games. But if you could tell me, do you want Notre Dame to go 11-1 with wins over Ohio State, Clemson, and USC, but a loss somewhere in quarter two? I would say I'd take that. The only not great loss I'd have a problem with is if you're going to tell me it was going to be BC, that would not be good, because I don't know if Notre Dame without a conference championship can sustain a late season loss, right, and jump back in, unless they were undefeated and now they've joined the ranks of the one loss teams. It would be very hard. Now, the thing that could help them is if USC is good, then you jump up and, you know, you beat them and then you jump back into the top four. But if they're going to lose to a not great team, I would want it to be in this quarter.
Yeah. Before the halfway mark, because you've got plenty of time to not erase it, but
yeah,
answer it.
And to your point, you've got a lot of get right games on your schedule. Like, let's say they lost to North Carolina or BYU. They would not be ideal losses. But if you lost to North Carolina, you'd have a bye week and then BYU and then a bunch of get right games. If you lose to BYU, you immediately jump into your get right games. You know, you got Stanford at home, and you've got, you know, UNLV, and you know, just a lot. Syracuse, you got a lot of teams that you can go beat. Sure. Now, I would not be happy with any losses to any of those teams.
No, right?
That's not what we're saying. But if you're gonna do that, if you're gonna have a win over Ohio State and Clemson and USC, be 11-1. I think this says a lot about your football team. I'd rather have that than 11-1 last year, where you beat all the teams that weren't good, and then you lost to the only good team you played.
Right.
That was a very unsatisfying 11-1 season.
It was,
to be honest.
I agree.
Because you're like, what are you hanging your hat on about next year?
And that's why I wasn't even upset they didn't make it into the playoff, because they didn't deserve it.
I thought they would have deserved it if Bama lost.
Well,
I would have thought that.
Everything shook out.
Right.
It didn't bother me because they didn't deserve it.
Once Bama, and we could have argued, you know, like, you know, Georgia and who did they beat? No, but the reality is they would have had the win over Bama, right? Like, that's your point, Vince. Like, you know, Bama had a bad loss, but losing to Texas A&M, but, you know, they had some good wins, right? I mean, that was the thing, is like, you know, say, well, Cincinnati didn't beat anybody, beat Notre Dame, right? I mean, you know what I mean? So it's like, they're hanging their hat on a loss to Cincinnati in a game they never led. 60 minutes they trailed. I mean, well, not 60 minutes. I mean, Cincinnati scored early in the first quarter, right. Like they never tied it. The only tie of that game was 0-0. So to your point, yes, I want to build season like 2015. That's what still leaves a bitter taste in my mouth. Notre Dame didn't beat anybody today. That was a great Notre Dame, a great Notre Dame team from a talent standpoint.
Sure.
They beat nobody. Their only ranked win that year was over Navy. Their second best win that year was over Temple, because they lost to every other ranked team they played. And again, it was a coaching issue. But yes, I would always want to lose to a team that, in my opinion, was not as good, and then beat the great teams. Give me a win over Ohio State and a win over Clemson, but an upset early September loss to, or late September loss to North Carolina, or be early October loss to BYU. And I can handle that. Now, what I'd much rather prefer is 12-0.
Absolutely.
And we're halfway through, Vince. We're halfway through. I think we could say at this point in time, at worst, you're expecting 5-1, right? I mean,
absolutely. Right. That's where I'm at the moment. I mean, again, it's May, but yes, everything that I know so far up to this point, I fully anticipate nothing worse than 5-1 at this point in our prediction, you know, game that we're playing. Yep.
So Thursday, we'll be back with
quarter number three,
which is going to be an interesting quarter to talk about, because the first two games of that quarter are
joke,
and then it ends with
Clemson,
the Tigers.
Yes, a home game, luckily, with Clemson, where
we did have one question that I did want to address about what we're talking about before we go out of here, Vince. Kevin Marzalek says, where do you need to be ranked, be ranking wise at the midpoint to feel comfortable? So I imagine feeling comfortable means like a playoff berth.
Right.
To me, as long as you're, I mean, really, honestly, with Clemson and USC still on the schedule, and potentially, I think BC is going to be better than people think. I think they got a shot to be ranked when they come to Notre Dame Stadium. But with Clemson still on the schedule, with USC on the schedule, I think that as long as you're 10-13, you're okay. But if you're 10 or higher coming out of this midway point, you're fine.
Right.
I mean, because where was Notre Dame last year after they lost to Cincinnati? I'm going to look that up real quick before we get out of here, Vince. I know you.
Yeah, because my first inclination was being in top 10, you're in great shape at 5-1. But I think you could even be a little bit lower. And I was thinking top 15, but I think that might be a little bit too
low. Notre Dame fell to 14 last year after losing to Cincinnati. And
their way back up to five.
Five without any good wins.
Right?
Like, no good You've wins. Got good
wins coming in the second
You've
half.
Got at least one coming in the second half.
So, yeah. So, I
think 13. The closer 12. To 10, the better. Yeah. If you're inside the top 10 at that point in time, you're golden. And how does that happen? You lose a close game to Ohio State.
Because Notre Dame's going to be a top 10 team, obviously, going into week one.
Most likely, yeah. worst, fair, like eighth or ninth at worst in the polls.
And if you keep it close, you're not going to drop that far.
As long as it's a four quarter game, and then you go out and handle your business the next five games. Yes,
and that's the key. Yeah. So if you drop to the 14, 15 in that neighborhood, you've got five games.
Surprise me if it's a close four quarter game. That would surprise.
I agree. But you've got five games to start inching your way back up, and you know people ahead of you are going to fall because that's just reality. And so you're going to have a really good opportunity if you lose that first game to be in the top 10 by the time you roll into the second half. I really believe that.
I agree. All right, that's going to do. We are not going to have a Q&A for today's show. We've got some things going on. So, Vince, why don't you take us out of here, buddy?
Absolutely. So thank you, everybody, for joining us on our second quarter breakdown. Really appreciate it. We will be back. We'll be back tomorrow, but we'll be back Thursday for the third quarter breakdown of the season. And then, of course, our Friday free-for-all mailbag. So make sure you hit that like button. Make sure you subscribe so you always know when we're coming on. You never know when somebody might commit. But you're not going to know the show's happening unless you hit that subscribe or that little bell right there.
I got a feeling there will be a day this week where we'll have two shows. I'm just saying. It won't be tomorrow.
But make sure you share with all your friends and family. Really appreciate you guys tuning in and listening on the podcast or wherever you get your Irish Breakdown info. And also, make sure you hit that irishbreakdown.com because there's always good stuff over there as well. Breaking news on the staff and all that fun stuff. Is over there. So for Brian, I'm Vince, and we will talk to you next time on the Irish Breakdown Podcast.
If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.